What's up, everybody? It is your boy, Actively Lazy, a.k.a. IBS Yeezus, a.k.a. the Cub Hoss, as they call me here in the studio. I am coming at you guys with a afternoon show. I said earlier on the Facebook page that I would be switching to afternoons. Also, switching it up a little bit. Don't have my headphones on because, well, we've got people all around the studio and whatnot, so feel like I need to be able to hear my surroundings just in case somebody walks in while I'm recording. I don't want to get any extra sound going on, so I don't have my headphones on. So if I start speaking really loud or if it fluctuates a little with the volume, feel free to like message me, let me know how it sounds, because I like to hear myself when I podcast and when I'm on the radio. That's a big deal for me, like having my voice come through my ear so I can hear. But don't have that today, but doesn't matter. So we'll make this pretty quick. Again, afternoon show. Everybody wants to know about the playoffs. Everybody wants to talk about the playoffs. And don't think because the last like four or five podcasts have been NFL-centric that all I am is a football guy. I'm not. I do love basketball, college basketball, and then some NBA as well. So you'll get my takes on that. We'll get into that once football season ends. Football is so dominant in America. It's really hard to do a 30 to 45 minute podcast on four different sports and you have to talk football because everybody wants to talk football. So I'm not going to hold you guys on that. We'll get right to it. I will start with the coaching news over the playoffs because for some reason, everybody's still on this whole Bill Belichick deserves a chance. Look, man, Bill's old. I said earlier on air, I refer to him as a one-night stand, and I think some people got it twisted. You got to hear me out here. Bill is a fossil, and it's okay to be a fossil. He had a great air. People keep calling him the greatest coach of all time. I mean, I will always debate that you can't be the greatest coach of all time if you're not an innovator, but that's just my personal stance. But obviously, I respect him. In his generation and all the other generations, he's the guy. He's the guy, okay? So when it comes to Bill for the teams that need a coach now, like that's something we have to look at. The Falcons, the Raiders, the Titans, the Panthers, the Commanders, and I think, oh, the Chargers too. These are all teams that need long-term plans. They're not looking for a 1 to 2 year guy. Or maybe three max, which is why I call them a one-night stand. They need a long-term plan. So that's why they're going young. To me, the biggest storyline here isn't that Bill isn't getting hired or hasn't been hired. It's that Mike Vrabel, who is relatively young, all things considered in today's coaching landscape, he hasn't been hired. He hasn't been interviewing, really. And I know I was listening to Amber and Ian here in the studio in the morning. It was playing. But I think Amber made a good point that it was interesting that the only team, or actually that might have been Canty. But anyway, somebody made a point that there was only one team that Bill talked to, really, and that was the Falcons. And they thought that was interesting. I look at it from a standpoint of if you got a guy like Belichick, we know what his resume is. We know he's got the rings. We know he's got the pedigree. But if a franchise is willing to let somebody like that go, what makes you think another franchise is willing to pick them up? Because the way I see it, Bill's on the tail end of his career so much so that even Robert Kraft was done with them. And I don't want Robert Kraft's leftovers, even if it is a six-time Super Bowl champion coach. Because clearly, it ain't working. It ain't working. So the teams that, like, if it was an established franchise, like, let's say the Steelers. Let me pick a different team off the top of my head. Let's say the Eagles. The Eagles needed a head coach. Let's say Sirianni was fired. That'd be a good spot for somebody like Bill. Come in, maximize the opportunity of this little window that they have because they've already got established veteran players. They don't need anybody to develop. They're not looking for a 3 to 5 year plan. They're looking for a win now plan. That would work. Dallas Cowboys, win now plan. That would work. But the Falcons and all these other teams, they're not in win now mode. They're not. And they need to have a coach that's got some years in front of him or more years in front of him than he has behind him. And that isn't Bill Belichick. So I know people are whining about it, crying about it, like Adam Scheffler and a couple other people who are, you know, have bigger platforms. And they're like, this is a travesty. It's not, man. At some point, this era needs to change. This is what we're seeing. It's not the end of anything. It's just a new era is being ushered in. We've been spoiled with the Nick Sabans and the Bill Belichicks. These guys that have been coaching for 25, 30 years or et cetera and had all this sustained success. It is now time for new blood. The same way we had to let go of Brady and Manning, we got to let go of Bill and Nick. So new blood's coming in. Let's see what they can do. Give them an opportunity. I don't think Bill would put himself in a situation where he's going to be the defensive coordinator for anybody, but I wouldn't mind him as an advisor to a defensive coordinator or somebody like Staley. God, Staley needs some help. I just saw that he was interviewing for defensive coordinator for the Packers. I don't know what that's about. I wouldn't let that dude anywhere near my defense. He wasn't a good defensive coordinator for real when he was with the Rams. Wasn't a good defensive coordinator or good defensive anything when he's with the Chargers. So I don't understand why he would get another chance with a team like the Packers, who just got rid of a below average defensive coordinator. But I think some of that's just semantics. Like, you got to interview somebody, right? So I think Bill would be good in that sense if he was something like a mentor or something. Stay close to the game, an advisor, groomed another coach, maybe help out your kids like McDaniels and Patricia, for crying out loud. Spend some time with your family, Bill. But at this point, I think it's safe to say if he doesn't get in, you know, now he's not ever getting in. I think the only job remaining really is Seattle. And Seattle just got rid of Pete Carroll because he was too old. So I don't understand why bringing Bill Belichick, who's just as old, would be an option. It's the Trump and Biden thing. Like, they're both old. Like, if your complaint is that one is too old, then the other is relatively too old, too. They're virtually the same. So there is my thoughts on that. Raheem Morris getting the job. Falcons fans kind of on edge, don't really know what to expect. That's going to happen. Like, we don't know what to expect. I will say that I feel like we should give him a second chance. I feel like he might have learned. We've seen coaches come through when the timing isn't necessarily right and people take chances on him and it just doesn't work out. That was the Bucs with Raheem Morris, man. Like, he was 33 when he took over that team. And if I recall, I think that team was more on the aging side. So they had a lot of, like, really old vets on that team. Not really who you want a young guy to come into. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. And that's probably where that was going. But it wasn't a super talented roster. It wasn't the Gruden Super Bowl winning roster, the Tony Dungy NFC Championship attending roster. So he did what he could. It didn't work out, and he has been through it, not in a bad way, but he went back through the process. He was a passing game coordinator for the Falcons. He worked on the offensive side of the ball. I think he was a wide receivers coach with somebody at some point along the way, and then he worked his way back up to defensive coordinator, which is what we knew him to be. I think he had a stint with the Commanders. He was their cornerbacks coach or something like that. But he was the defensive coordinator for the Rams during their Super Bowl win, and he's been the defensive coordinator for the Rams over the last couple years, and they've been a solid unit. I thought this year was his best coaching job for defensive coordinator. Aaron Donald is getting long in the tooth. There's not a ton of talent on that team, but they were always well prepared. And the majority of the times I saw the Rams get beat defensively is because they were not good enough. It wasn't that they were not prepared. So I like that he's a guy that looks like he knows how to get the most out of a roster because he knows the personnel. He knows how to manage the team well. And that is very, very important in today's game, to find a coach who recognizes talent and knows the limits of that talent and can either bring the best out of the person or protect them from being the worst case scenario of themselves. And I think that's one of the things that makes Ben Johnson so attractive, is that he's shown that he can navigate somebody who has limits like Jared Goff. And I know that we got some talking heads out here that are making it seem like Goff is somebody that we've overlooked. He's not, man. He's the same guy. You look at his stats and look at the depth of the stats. Look at his yards per pass, yards per catch, and things like that. You can make a clear argument that the definition of what people want to say as a game manager today is Jared Goff. Out of the four quarterbacks left in the playoffs, he's the one with the lowest averages on his passes and stuff. He's the one that looks like he's a game manager. He's not a big throw, big play guy. But he's got playmakers around him. Ben Johnson knows that, and he gets the ball to the playmakers, and that is the difference. They're not asking Jared Goff to carry the team. They're asking him not to mess it up. And I think when he was with the Rams, he was asked to carry the team, especially in that Super Bowl where Todd Gurley got hurt or came in limping. He was asked to carry the team, and he just wasn't good enough to do that. That's perfectly fine. That's not a knock on him. Not there's, again, in the history of the NFL, in my lifetime, in my era, there's only been about 3 to 4 guys max at a time that you could say they can carry this team as a quarterback. Like, we win a Super Bowl is because of them. You can't really say that about the majority of guys. Usually it takes a team, and Jared Goff needs a team, and he's got one in Detroit. So Ben Johnson is definitely going to be on the radar for the Commanders. I think that's why it's been kind of hush-hush. Well, it's not really been that hush-hush, but I think that's their guy, and I think that's the team that he wants. And again, I will say this. I said it last Friday when I did my little hour segment here at the studio. If you're looking for a rebuild and a fresh start and you're a coach, dude, the Commanders have the number 2 pick. I think the number 34, 35 pick. And then I think they got another top 40 pick. So you got 3 picks in the top 40. You've got over $70 million in cap space. And you got an ownership that's looking to let you be an innovator, let you do what you do, because they are so hungry to win. And they're looking to do the complete opposite of what Daniel Snyder did. And that was metal, which is, you know, that's all he did was metal. They're looking to be hands off. Let the football guys be the football guys and let's all win. I think it's setting up to be one of the premier destinations in the league. And I know it's crazy to say that, but I really feel like in my heart of hearts that Josh Harris and this team or this ownership is on the right track to creating something that is a contender at some point. You know, how long that takes, I don't know, because they still got to get the talent. But they're moving in the right direction. They're getting the front office straight. They're getting the coach straight, hopefully, in Ben Johnson. And they're going to let him cook. And we'll get some good football in D.C. I need good football in D.C. One, because it makes my job more likable. It gives me something to do on Sundays. I don't want to have to travel to see good football. I would love to go to D.C. every Sunday that they play and watch good football, because I'm going to Baltimore next year to watch good football. And I hope that the Commanders stay the course. And so that's my thoughts on the coaching. Like, Bill's done. He's old. It's fine. Let him go. He had a great career. Raheem Morris, give him a chance. We don't know what we don't know until we see it, until he shows it to us. So there's nothing wrong with taking a splash shot on a guy who's worked both sides of the football and seems to have a better grasp of what it takes to be a winning coach in the NFL. So good luck to him. Be looking heavy at him because they got a lot of talent, and I like to gamble on the Falcons. You're really playing roulette when you bet the Falcons. So let's get to our playoff games. We only got 2. We don't have to give you the backstory on that. Game 1, Ravens-Chiefs. I'm seeing 4 right now on Bleacher Report. They get their spreads from DraftKings, +4, Chiefs over under at 44. Chiefs money line is +164. I know earlier today when we did the show, one of the contributors we have, he said that there was going to be some weather, like some rain or something like that, coming in, like an 80% chance. Look, Mahomes plays in all weather. I don't think it's going to affect him that much. Same with Lamar. I don't think it's going to change anything. The ground attack is the ground attack. I don't think because it's raining they're going to get 10 more carries from Lamar or their rushing offense. What makes more sense to me is that they just come in and play your game. These teams are familiar with each other. Monken has Lamar playing at a very efficient rate. It's not as flashy in the sense of you don't get but so many 100-yard rushing games, and you don't get so many but so many rushing touchdowns or so many like escape throws, but it's efficient. You know, turnovers are down. He's really good against the blitz this year. He doesn't look like he's ever to the point where he's confused about what he should do, how to check down, how to progress. It's not a one-read type offense. He's not standing in the pocket like a statue going through progressions like Manning, but it's a comfortable rhythm, and that's the key to this team is they have a rhythm offensively. You got to get them out of rhythm. How do you do that? It's a good question. Spagnuolo is a mastermind at coming up with creative ways to get people out of rhythm and using the blitz. How do you blitz Lamar Jackson? Because it's a catch 22. If somebody misses their assignment, you know, when you think about blitzing, you're man to man. Guys got their back to a scrambling quarterback. If somebody misses a tackle and Lamar gets loose, you're 25, 30 yards before anybody gets near him, probably, depending on how they're, you know, set up in their formation. So it is a catch 22, but I am a big proponent, and I'll say this when we get to Dan Campbell, you play the game the way that, like, it got you there. Like, you don't come in as a man blitzing defense, and then for this week, you're going to play just zone. No. If you played a little bit of zone, because everybody does, everybody's got a mixture. Nobody's truly just man across the board, not in today's game. But if you got a mixture, then mix it up a little bit more. Get creative. I think the best way to attack people like Lamar Jackson isn't with adding extra blitzers in the rush. I think the best way is to come up with creative ways to get guys free on the defensive line. So a little bit more stunning action up front, more twist and turns. I used to love the blitz, the rush combo of Justin Smith and Alden Smith, because Justin would just come through and just take people with him. Like, honestly, it was defensive holding, but, you know, they ain't call it then, and I don't think they really call it now. But he would just take the tackle out the way with him, just rush with him, grab him, do whatever, hook him and bring him out the way. And then Alden would twist inside or twist outside, and he's super fast. You know, he comes in free, and it throws the quarterback off, because there's one thing when a guy's blitzing, even if it's delayed, if you can see where it's coming from, it's not as scary as, I thought this guy was getting blocked. Oh, snap, he's in my face. That's what happens with the twist up front, and I think that'll be something to keep an eye on, and I think that's how Spags should attack them. Like, if you're gonna blitz, yeah, you could throw in your extra guy, throw in a corner blitz or something like that, but the real key here is those twists and stunts up front that'll hopefully keep him in the pocket long enough that the pocket collapses around him or the pressure gets to him, and then you can get what is essentially a coverage sack, but not really. But it's got to be a team effort on defense. And then offensively, because these are the matchups, it's the Ravens' offense against the Chiefs' defense and the Chiefs' offense against the Ravens' defense. It's not Mahomes versus Jackson. It's not. I mean, they keep billing it like that, and it really irritates me. These two dudes don't play each other, man. These are two really good defenses. I think the Chiefs are number two and the Ravens are number three. So it's the quarterback versus the defense, the defensive coordinator versus the offensive coordinator. It's not two quarterbacks. I hate when they do that. But the Chiefs, they got to make plays around them. Patrick Mahomes is going to have a good game. And even when he has a bad game, it's still a good game. But he's got to get something out of Rice, who has been pretty solid this year and has had an uptick in his production in the playoffs. He's got to get Pacheco to keep running like a angry child. That's the weirdest run, man. Those high knees. How you 5'5 with high knees, man? It's weird. But he's got to keep getting something out of him. And then they need obviously Kelce, because he's a big part of their offense and their rhythm. But they need other guys to step up so bad, so bad. And please, for God's sake, don't give the ball to people like Hartman if they haven't touched the ball all game in big, like, key moments. Don't do that. And so I don't know how you attack this Ravens defense. I'll be honest with you. They send a lot of pressure. If you can get guys out in space, they're such good tacklers. They swarm to the ball. They play with high energy. So I guess the easiest way is to just take what they give you. And that's something that the Chiefs have struggled with a little throughout Patty's tenure. They try to force it a little bit. They try to make you bend to their will. And I know, I think it was in 2021 when they were struggling a little bit against the too high safety look. It's because they were just trying to force things. Like, instead of just taking what they give them, instead of taking the crossing route that's 3 yards and letting the guy run for another 4 or 5, they want the big play. They want the 8 to 10 yard route that can go another 15. They were young then. They're a little bit more seasoned and experienced now. I know people probably think that doesn't matter, a 2-year span, but you got to think their first Super Bowl was 2019. They were living on a high, and I think in 2020 they got beat by the Buccaneers, so there was this urgency to get it back in 2021. So that happens from time to time, and people kind of overextend a little and get away from the basics. And you'll hear coaches, even, you know, big time scorers. Let's do the basketball analogy again. Steph Curry, he makes 15 threes on one night, and then he goes another five or six games and he's only hitting like two or three threes. And you'll hear him say something like, we just got to get back to the basics, or I got to get back to the basics. That's kind of what the Chiefs were at back in 2021. Just got to get back to the basics. And they did in 2022, and they ended up winning another Super Bowl. So this game is definitely a just keep it simple, Kansas City. Don't try to get cute with this team, because if you turn the ball over, you're going to find yourself in a hole. And you don't want to be in downs where the Ravens know. Without a doubt, you're going to pass. Yes, this is a game, as a play caller, you've got to manage it. You've got to manage it perfectly, too, because you want to protect your offensive line against a formidable and very versatile rush in the Ravens. So this Nagy and Andy Reid got to have a good game from the sideline. And that's something that Andy Reid has done in his tenure with the Chiefs that he didn't really do as much game management wise with the Eagles is have a good game from the sideline. But he's figured it out in Kansas City. He's not the Eagles Andy, so I'll trust him a little bit. I'm going to lay the four here just because it's Patrick Mahomes. I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't cover, but the same way last week I was like, look, I'm going to take Mahomes to win just for the chaos factor and the fact that he's still the best quarterback in the league. Same thing, man. If they lose, they're going to lose by a field goal. I don't think they're going to lose by more than a field goal. So if you're giving me anything other than three, I got to go with the Chiefs here. Also, you know, elephant in the room. Hey, the Ravens are known to beat themselves. Haven't seen it in a while. Haven't seen it in a while. Actually haven't seen it since I think that Browns game. But a part of me is still like, you know what? They are. It's still a slim possibility that they could beat themselves. And if they don't beat themselves, they can make a game where they should have easily won more difficult and not cover, which is something that could happen as well. So safe side, I'll take my points with the Chiefs here. Over under at 41 or 44, whatever. I don't know, man. I typically try to stay away from calling point total games. I'd rather just bet the spread. Because anything can happen when you're talking about these point totals. And we don't know the true game plan by the Ravens. So I'll be patient on that. And I'll let you know a little bit more. You could follow me on Facebook and I'll post something before the game about how that's going to look. All right. Over to the next game. The game that is very near and dear to me. The NFC Championship. The Lions are traveling to San Francisco to play the Niners. That game is at 6:30. The Niners are now 7.5 favorites, 7.5 point favorites. Everybody's wondering what's going on with Debo. I don't know, man. I don't know. I wish I could tell you. I keep looking for if he practiced or not. I don't expect him to hit. I know yesterday they were hitting, so I wouldn't expect him to hit. But I saw that he was at least on the bike and stuff like that. That's better than getting treatment while they're practicing. So my expectation is that Debo will be on the field as a decoy. I don't expect to see Debo actually touch the ball. I know people are like, well, if he gets hit, well, if you're targeting him to hit him in the shoulder, then I'm sure there's a way to get around that. Like, he's going to block. He's not a shoulder blocker. No receiver's a shoulder blocker anyway. So, you know, if he runs a route or something, as long as he can be on the field, I think it changes the look and it makes the Lions afraid. It makes you guard us differently. I had this argument today with the host and the couple callers about who's more important to the offense. I'm not going to redo that argument because, one, I'm talking to myself. And then, two, I don't think you guys want to hear that. So just know we need Debo Samuels to be the most efficient team that we could possibly be. We need Christian McCaffrey. We need Christian McCaffrey to be healthy so we can be the best version of ourselves. And I think I worded that appropriately. And so I don't think that the Lions are going to make this easy. I think it's going to be a matchup of who's going to be more physical with who. I look forward to that. I like those kind of games. I know in the Niners playoff history in this century, every time we've gotten to the playoffs, we've run across a team that is just as physical as us, and we have to out-physical them. Back when Alex Smith was here, it was the Saints. We always have to go through the Saints in that defense that like to hit, and we smacked them in the mouth. And then I think we had the Saints a couple times a couple years ago, too, that we had to kind of go through. And then the Giants, always the Giants, too. Another team that, you know, you got to get physical. They're physical, too. You got to play their style of football. So the Niners have made a living being the most physical team in the NFC. But it changed, obviously, on Christmas Eve when we played the Ravens. But by and large, we're more physical than the Packers. We're more physical than the Cowboys. And we're more physical than the Eagles when we're healthy. But we have not faced this Lions team yet. And we have not faced the Dan Campbell-inspired Lions, who are just as physical as everybody else, too. And so I look forward to seeing this game play out on the field because it's a man's game, if we're being honest, machismo here, a lot of it. Like, who's tougher than who? Like, yeah, we're all gonna take punches. We're all gonna get knocked down. Who's gonna get up and who's gonna fight back? And that's what this is gonna be about. Cause neither team, I expect, will lay down for the other, no matter what happens in the game. So I look forward to that. Brock Purdy's just gotta be Brock Purdy. Don't turn the ball over if you can help it, buddy. And just manage the game in the best way you can. And when we need you to make a play, make a play. Get the ball to your playmakers. Let your playmakers cook. Get out the way. Be efficient. With Jared Goff, I mean, he's 3-6 against the Niners lifetime. He's got great history with the Niners. If you're a Niners fan, he has great history. But he's familiar with the atmosphere, familiar with the team, familiar with the system that he's experienced with this tough defense. Nothing has changed since he's left and went to Detroit as far as the Niners go, except for the names on the jersey. So I'm sure he's not worried about that. Ben Johnson, Dan Campbell, and I don't really like their defensive coordinator. I think it's Aaron Glenn is his name or something like that. Not a big fan of him. But Lions staff, again, do every single thing that got you to this moment. Do not come into this game and start punting on 4th-and-2. Do not come into this game and not be aggressive, because that is how you will get beat. If your DNA is to fight and be aggressive, that 50-plus percentage that you got going forward on 4th down, you have to stay the course. Trust your process. And I'm saying that as a fan of Dan Campbell and just a fan of, like, go out on your shield, man. Don't overthink it. And a Niners fan saying don't overthink it. Yeah, Kyle, talking to you too. I wish I had my damn it, Kyle, button on here. But, yeah, don't overthink it. Stay the course. Do it. What got you there? If you're the Niners defense, I think you should cut the middle of the field off as much as possible. Close the windows that Jared Goff has to throw. Play man-to-man a little bit more than what you're comfortable with doing, but only because you need to get pressure on him. He's not as good against pressure as everybody else left in the playoffs, and he has a tendency to make some really poor throws while he's under pressure, even though they've been caught most of the time this year. If you go to, there's a deep metric that they have on PFF about turnover worthy throws. He's up to like 10% for the playoffs, which is pretty high. I think everybody else is around 3-4%. He's double that basically of everybody else. So there's something there, I think, to be had. But tell your DBs, no easy ones. Don't be holding and grabbing people. If you get beat, you just get beat. But we've got to see him beat us. You got to see him throw over top and hit you a couple times, not just one time, because any NFL quarterback, I think, can get at least one good playoff against a cover zero or a cover one. We better not play zero. But against a single high look or any kind of straight man look that you get, I think any NFL-capable QB can do that. But can he do it consistently? And that's the thing. He's got to be consistent with it. And if you're the Niners defense, set the edge, man. Set the edge. It's going to be a grind. They're going to run at you. And part of rush defense is grit and determination and effort to stop the dude in front of you from beating you. And I don't question any of that with the Niners. I just question our approach to that last game. Like, we did not set the edge well at all. Chase Young played like a punk. I'm not a big Chase Young fan. Can't wait for this experiment to be over. We didn't give up a lot for him. And then, you know, you always hold on hope that he'll turn it around or he'll have a game where it's like, aha. So I'm hoping this is his aha game, because we really need that. We can't depend on Nick Bosa to cover sideline to sideline. That's not his ministry. Fred Warner and Greenlaw, do what you do. Be the enforcers, man. Make Montgomery and Gibbs pay. Gibbs can fumble. He has done it before. He is a very dynamic running back. So, you know, wrap up if you hit him. Don't just throw your body into him, Chase Young. Actually wrap up. On the other side, if you're the Lions defense, you pray because you don't really have a chance unless Debo's hurt and they don't give you the same looks that we've been giving everybody else. Pound for pound, they don't match up with the Niners. That's just what it is. They don't. They're not dominant up front enough. Their linebackers are not athletic enough, and their secondary is not skilled enough to cover and tackle in a manner that would give the Lions fits. My host in the morning loves to talk about that Ravens game. This Lions defense getting compared to the Ravens defense is absolutely disrespectful to the Ravens defense. They're not the same. Nowhere near. So I'm not even worried about that. But what they can do is they can force turnovers, and that'll help a whole lot. So, you know, if they take the chances, if they take the necessary risk to jump routes and things like that, just be risky. Take the chance. You know, sitting back is going to get you killed. Then you might as well lose this battle playing aggressive. And that would be my thing for the Lions. So I see this game playing out. I think, again, Debo's going to at least dress out. I think the Niners are just more cohesive team and unit. I think the familiarity with Jared Goff helps, even though Ben Johnson is a phenomenal play caller. And Dan Campbell has shown that he's willing to take the calculated risk. I think in this game, it kind of bites him in the butt. I told somebody before, if you're on 4th-and-2 or 4th-and-1 and you got a quarterback sneaking or something like that, I absolutely love those situations for my Niners defense. We have shown over the last 4 to 5 years, that is where we make our living, on goal line stops and things like that. So teams who are super aggressive, if they're not able to execute it correctly, then they definitely pay for it when they play the Niners. So I think the Niners still win this game. I can see us scoring at least 30-31, I would think, as long as Debo is healthy and people don't get hurt, because we're not deep, but as long as we got the right parts out there, I think we can get it up to over 30. And I think this Lions team gets about 23, 24-ish. So I would take my point still with the Lions, but I would keep an eye on it just in case. And I think the reason for that is I don't expect the Lions to come out and get up like or get up, you know, more than 2 scores. So the value, and to me, the value at that 7.5 is probably the highest you'll get it, even on a live bet. I think that's the highest you'll get it. So if you like the Lions, just take that now. And if you like the Niners, maybe wait, see if they get down a touchdown or something, and that line drops down to about 6 or 5, and then you go ahead and take it there. That might help as well. But that is my take on both games and on the coaching. Thank you guys for listening. Just remember, next week I will be at the Senior Bowl live, Mobile, Alabama. Follow the page, which is the unofficial platform. I hate that it says that. But the unofficial platform IBS uses on Facebook. Just follow that, and you will be able to see some of my live content. I'm not going to stream live or anything. I don't think I can do that at the practices, but I can record some stuff. I might have some sound bites. I know I'll get some kind of access to interview players or ask questions. Bo Nix, Penix will be there. Johnny Wilson, the receiver from Florida State. And then Spencer Rattler. I just name off the quarterbacks because everybody knows them. Michael Pratt from Tulane will be there as well, but it's more so to kind of, you know, network with some of these scouts and things like that. I'll definitely be passing out my card, seeing if I can even get somebody on a podcast here to talk about some pre-draft stuff. That'd be kind of cool as well. And also for the station, to get them on the station as well. All right, so I will catch you guys next, or the week after next. But again, if you get on the Facebook page, I'll interact with you there. But feel free to replay this. Hold me accountable. If you lose some money with me, I apologize, but we mostly went over here. So let's keep that going. You guys have a great weekend.